Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The Ad News Pubcast. The podcast that celebrates the industry's penchant for a sociable drop and a chat.
Welcome to the Ad News Podcast, sponsored by The Trade Desk and produced for us by Nova Entertainment. I'm Ad News journalist Lindsay Bennett, and today I'm joined by TBWA CEO Paul Bradbury, TBWA Creative Director Kat Jarrett, and Eleven Managing Director Roberto Pace. Before we jump into everything Cannes Lions, we'd love to get kind of the backstory on how you guys all got into advertising. Paul, can we start with you?
Yeah. Mum got me some work experience. A friend of hers at Tennis, his husband, worked in a little agency in North Sydney back in the early 90s, and I did some work experience. I spent a couple of days there and did a voice recording with John Laws for Valvoline Oil. And after that, I was hooked and got my first job at JWT as a media assistant when the media was bundled in with creative work.
Oh, nice. John Laws got you into it.
Totally.
And Kat, what about you?
So I'm actually a Kiwi, which you can probably tell from my accent. So I started out in Wellington, but when I was about 12 years old, I saw an ad on TV that Saatchi & Saatchi had made. And I don't know if anyone has seen that spot. It's sort of back in the mid-90s. It was a bunch of geese flying, and they did this whole sort of Saatchi's rah-rah thing, and I just completely fell in love with that. So geese got me into advertising.
What about you, Roberto?
Oh, mine's a bit more cliched. I spent a really long time trying to get into this really popular fine arts degree, and I did, and then it killed me having to have my work critiqued every week. And simultaneously, I was working in retail, and I was pretty good at selling things. So the equation in my brain was selling, PR, advertising. I think I can make a buck out of that. I'll switch degrees, and that's how it happened.
Do you still get your work critiqued every week, though?
Sadly, yes.
Yeah, I thought so. Today, we're kind of talking about Cannes Lions. Obviously, it's going on right now, in the thick of it.
And we're not there.
I know. Very sad.
I mean, you're off.
We're here in our jumpers. That's on it. The coldest day of winter.
That's it.
Looking at things that have won in the past at Cannes Lions, what kind of criteria do you think makes winning work? I'd like to ask all of you, but Paul, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. I think if you look at the work that's doing well so far, and we're only halfway through the week, Fearless Girl, Meet Graham, there is a consistency in those ideas to other ideas that have done really well at Cannes over the years, and that's its simplicity. I think great work is defined in three ways. First of all, you need to feel something immediately. It needs to drive a reaction. Secondly, it needs to be visually very arresting. I think that's very important. We live in a very, very visual culture, and it's probably no coincidence that both of those ideas I mentioned are both very visual ideas. They're both sculptures. And the third factor is they kind of feel simple and obvious, but that's the genius, that they do feel so simple and obvious. You know, simplicity is the key to brilliance, and getting to that distillation and that simplicity is the hard bit, and that's what makes great work iconic work.
Mm. And Kat, what work have you kind of seen that's inspired you?
Oh, so much. I've just been sort of trawling the Cannes website. I really love this beautiful piece of print, which just came out from BK, and it's basically just this Doors on Fire, which I just think is is lovely, talking to their flame-grilled proposition. So that was one thing. And then I also really enjoyed the Boost Mobile stuff that I think it just won in promo and activation, but it was such a simple idea, again, sort of just what Bradis was talking about. So simple, so beautifully executed, and it was just turning their stores into places where people could vote. So solving a really simple problem.
Mm. And Paul, the work you kind of mentioned is kind of a blend of art and sculpture and education and a bit of advertising as well. Roberto, in kind of the PR division at TBWA, how have you kind of seen the role of PR change that goes towards winning work?
Yeah, I think not just at TBWA, but generally PR has come out of this place of being largely a communication tool. We need it to communicate something, to convey this message. And where it's moving more into the space of is being, you know, another tool for commercial growth, commercial change, etc. And I think that transition has come out of ideas no longer being just about communicating headlines, but communicating things that are about cultural relevance or things that should be culturally relevant. So the work that I think does well at Cairns, and I think the guys have summed it up really well, but a lot of them tend to be anchored in some kind of cultural truth or tension. Fearless Girl is obviously anchored in the concept of women in leadership roles. Meet Graham is more about road safety and what we need to do as a society to better protect ourselves and the ones that we love around us. But the work that's really anchored in things that are meaningful and have a place in culture tends to do really well, and that's certainly what we've seen, that change in TBWA PR. It's gone from being PR this campaign to play an active role in what we do and really celebrate how it can drive that cultural change and cultural opportunity for clients.
Mm. And a lot of TBWA's positioning is about disruption. How would you say that's kind of reflected in how you guys drive creativity? Kat, maybe we could start with you.
So I think disruption is sort of just, it's as simple and as complicated as just sort of looking for the gap, right? So, you know, what's everyone forgotten? What are people not seeing anymore? What's not done by this category, and what rules can we break? And my creative partner and I often just write, what rules can we break, when we're sort of trying to come up with new ideas? And I think thinking like that in that disruptive way is what gets you to really interesting work.
Mm. Paul, what about you?
Well, disruption's quite a buzzword of the times, isn't it? Disruption's actually been part of TWA for the last 20 years. It was a phrase coined by Jean-Marie Giroux, our global chairman, some 20 years ago. And it's actually our strategic philosophy, and it's our strategic process that we use to solve almost every business problem. It's a really simple collaborative process we do with our clients. There's three simple steps. First of all, we look at any conventions in a category. They might be consumer conventions or pricing conventions or distribution conventions. Then we agree a vision for where that brand might want to go for the next 5 years. Then we come back to those conventions and we find the biggest one that's holding that brand back, and we overturn it. And from that becomes the disruptive idea. And as Kat says, it's about finding the spaces, the fresh territory for brands to play in. And that's what the disruptive process is all about.
Mm. How would you say disruption is kind of reflected in the work that you submitted to Cairns this year?
I think if you look at some of the ANZ work we've done over the last 4 years now, and it was great, our Melbourne team picked up a couple of awards the other night for Hold Tight. Mm. That's the fourth year in a row that we've picked up awards for ANZ. I think we've found some, you know, fresh territory with what we did with the Equal Future campaign a couple of years ago, where we revealed that obviously women weren't being compensated the same way that men were. And I think we've used it to unlock fresh territory for talking about ANZ commitment to the gay and lesbian community as well. And it's unlocked some interesting work this year. It unlocked the insight that same-sex couples feel embarrassed to hold hands in public. And so we demonstrated that and brought that to the attention, and hopefully we're going to help to remove that embarrassment.
Mm, yeah, it's beautiful work. What about the PR side? How do you think disruption kind of comes into your daily output?
It's funny. So there's two PR agencies. One is Fleischmann Hillard, which is part of a global network, and the other one's Eleven, which is TBWA's own PR agency that started in New Zealand and then came to Australia 5 years after it was founded. And the name Eleven, what it's about really is if 10 is about leveraging culture, which is what a lot of PR people do. You see something happening in the world and then you turn it into an opportunity for a client. Well, going above that, going to that step 11 is about creating culture. And in order to create something that is new and different, you've got to be disruptive. So we're looking at things that are culturally relevant, that have cultural tensions in them, but we want to play with them in completely new and different ways that bring about that disruption that doesn't just land us in great PR or social chatter, but brings about that commercial change that elevates it from just another PR campaign that made a headline to something that drove a business forward.
Mm. I guess that kind of goes into my next question, which is about creative effectiveness. CAN entries this year were actually down, but the entries into creative effectiveness soared 59%, which is massive. A lot of the times when I kind of speak to creatives and marketers, they say they're valuing awards like the Effies more than ever before. It begs the question, is award-winning work the same as effective work that drives business results?
Paul? It doesn't surprise me award entries are down. It's very expensive to enter awards. And we read today, obviously, publicists are pulling out of all award shows for the next year to save some money to invest into their internal collaborative platform. So that's a very, very bold move from publicists.
Do you agree with it?
I agree with making a bold move. I think being bold and following through with a commitment to build, you know, one consolidated agency across the world is a brave one. And it's good that he's investing in, you know, communication collaboration tools. It's bold because I think he'll disenfranchise a few creatives and probably planners within his agencies who like having the marker of creative awards. It's important for their careers. But look, it's only for a year, and I'm sure he knows what he's doing. It's a bold statement, and perhaps the whole industry does need a bit of a reset when it comes to creative awards. We have too many shows, and maybe that's part of that statement as well. So, look, I admire his bold call on it, but let's see if he follows through. He seems to be a man that will follow through, so we'll see. But in terms of the point you make, I mean, there is definitely a direct correlation between creativity and effectiveness. It has been proven, and many of the great campaigns that have won at Cannes the following year also do very well at creative effectiveness, once again proving that correlation. I think it's great that there are more entries into the creative effectiveness categories. It's coming off a lower base, but I think it's great, and it's more proof that our industry and creativity can deliver real commercial results.
And Kat, what about you? Are you seeing more clients really sought after that effectiveness rather than maybe the art or the craft?
It's such an interesting question that I find it weird that we sort of try and divorce those two things, because I genuinely think that you can't make, I mean, the point of what we're doing is to make effective work. So I really don't think that you can pull them apart. I think every client wants their work to.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Be effective. It just so happens that when it's creative, it is more effective, which has been proven. So, I don't think you can pull those things apart.
Also got to remember that, you know, every creative category, there has to be an element of effectiveness in the CAN entry. So I think that's important to keep in mind too. There's always effectiveness built into every creative entry. into Cannes as well.
Mm-hmm. I've seen this shift particularly in PR, so where work would be presented to clients, whether they knew it existing, and you talk about the PR results, that's becoming less and less relevant. I think clients expect great agencies to be able to get great PR and social and content results with their eyes closed. What they're really asking for, though, is what was the commercial outcome of what you did? And in PR, it can become really challenging because while we're developing campaigns that are effective and can be effective, there is still a bit of pushback from clients on spending the same amount of investment they would in analysing a PR campaign and its outcomes as they would have a traditional creative campaign. So we don't always have the opportunity to capture that full spectrum of effectiveness, whereas if it was run as a pure creative traditional campaign, it would be, it would be silly not to run the effectiveness channels and to make sure that it worked in the same way.
Mm. So clients kind of looking for more of those metrics that aren't always available?
I think they're definitely looking for those metrics, and PR people have to get far better at how they present findings and effectiveness. But on the flip side, clients need to be able to invest in the measurement of those channels.
Mm.
And sometimes because it's wrapped under the banner of a PR agency did it, the investment they put behind it isn't the same as what it would be if it was done through a creative agency.
Mm, yeah. It's an interesting point, and another interesting thing that's happened at Cannes this year was clients' entries surged 69%. You know, a reason of that could be because agencies are trying to save a few dollars and instead clients entering work, which I'm sure we might see with some publicist work next year.
Mm.
But what do you kind of think that indicates about the industry with clients getting more involved?
Well, clients are building in-house creative capabilities.
Mm.
The Twitter Outdoor Grand Prix went to Twitter's in-house creative agency. So I think it's reflective of that. And I think there's some success, but there's also some pretty public failures in terms of in-house creative agencies. And I obviously point to the Pepsi Kendall Jenner episode.
I don't think anyone can skip over that one.
No, I don't think so. So, look, I think it's challenging for clients to build creative cultures with inside their organisations. I think Twitter obviously they've hired an ex-TWA creative, actually, Jayanta, who did the work that won a Grand Prix. But I think it's going to be a real challenge for clients to try and build those creative capabilities in-house. And it will be the same challenge, obviously, that some of the management consultants have as they build out their entire customer experience capabilities to include marketing and advertising. It's not easy to build creative culture.
Mm, because those consultancies have a huge presence at Cannes this year, along with the Snapchats and the Facebooks
and tech companies,
of the world. Do you think they'll be kind of entering?
Yes, I do.
More and more?
I do. I noticed the Monkeys enter as Monkeys part of Accenture Digital, so it's already begun. So, yeah, definitely, and so they should.
Mm. Does Deloitte or PwC or any of those enter Cannes at the moment?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm sure they will in years to come.
Sure, next year.
It's the place to prove your creativity, so I'm sure they will.
Mm. I guess going back to publicists, and I know we kind of already spoke about it, but do you see it as a good thing for Omnicom to not have to go up against, Saatchi, Leo's, Marcel?
No, because you want all the best players to be competing so that when you do win, you know you've
deserve it.
You deserve it.
Yeah. Totally. Do you see it as like a little bit of a blow, I guess, to the competition at Cannes, our awards as well?
Potentially. It's still pretty competitive, and most of the major players, well, pretty much all the major players are still in there. I mean, Publicis is a fair-sized network, but it'd probably only make up 5% of the entries, maybe not even that. So there's still plenty of competition.
Yeah.
And with all the new competitors and joining and the management consultancies, the clients themselves, it'll still be a sweet to win at Cannes, like it must be for the boys at Clem's Melbourne this week, who are just going to have the most outstanding week, and well deserved too.
Wouldn't you love to work at that agency this week? Yeah, obviously, no one's jumping ship, but
it's their year. Good on them. The work is stunning, and it must be a great feeling. And they deserve everything, all the accolades they get. I mean, I could see them being Can Agency of the Year the way they're performing halfway through the week. And wow, wouldn't that be good for Australia and Australian creativity? I think it's brilliant.
I think the biggest winner for Shelley was Dumb Ways to Die. And if they haven't, do you expect them to surpass that campaign?
Depends what you judge it on. I don't think they'll get. I don't think they'll beat Dumb Ways in terms of number of awards won. Let's not forget, Dumb Ways to Die won 6 Grand Prix. Yeah. I don't think we'll ever see that again. I'm not sure. Maybe Mick Graham's got 2. There's probably, I don't know, another 3 or 4. Who knows? They might do it, but I never thought I'd see a campaign eclipse Dumb Ways to Die. Well, maybe it's Fearless Girl, because right now I think Fearless Girl's got a slight edge with the judges when it comes to Fearless Girl versus Mick Graham. And I think that's just because Fearless Girl's got another level and layer to it that's very interesting. Not only is it, you know, a fantastic, iconic cultural symbol that's been created, but it's also a fund. They've created an index or a fund that tracks companies where there's diversity of leadership management on the boards, and that fund is doing incredibly well. So it's more than just a point of view. There's action and there's real tangible, if you like, proof behind State Street's positioning on how important diversity is for performance of companies.
Roberto, from a PR perspective, we've just mentioned Graham and Fearless Girl. Is it easier to sell a sculpture? Like, why are these, you know, these sculptures are like the king of Cairns this year?
Yeah, it's funny. No is the short answer to that. It is incredibly difficult to sell a sculpture or some other kind of physical thing that you pop up. I think the thing that makes it work is that it's obviously anchored in a truth. It's anchored in something that's really relevant and problematic in culture right now.
And Roberto, no, you know this. You sold a sculpture this year. You sold the world's biggest... hamburger, didn't you?
I did sell the biggest hamburger.
Why is that not winning at Cannes this year?
Come on, Roberto, what happened?
Who knows? So, sculptures are not easy to sell, but things that are anchored in purpose absolutely work. And I think the purpose behind both of those ideas is what carries it through. And when you put on top of it, as Paul said, a tangible action of it's not just a sculpture, it's not just an act of defiance. It doesn't just mean that we're standing up for more women in leadership roles, but there is a fund, a tangible act behind it that gives back to people who do support this cause in a relevant way. It becomes an irresistible PR story.
I think, too, the nature of what both of those are, if you think about how sort of clickable those images are, I mean, you can't ignore that in your newsfeed. You can't ignore it on your Instagram and your Snapchat. And we're all sort of scrolling through our feeds so fast. And if you've got one arresting image, it just sort of stops everyone.
The things that make you feel something, which I think is what we said way back in this podcast, you look at that sculpture of Fearless Girl and you feel something immediately. You look at Meet Graham and it's a completely different type of feeling that you get, but you feel something. And that would be the same feeling that a journo or an influencer would get when you pitch the story to them. They're looking at an image to go with the story and they're going, our readers are going to love this because it's not just a static thing on a page. It's jumping out of us because it is so defiant and different to what we've seen.
And Fearless Girl kind of touches on the hot topic of diversity at Cairns this year, specifically gender. It's something that always comes up closer to home and, you know, we speak about so much because it's a very white, male-dominated industry, as we all know. How do you think that affects the creative industry here? And I guess, what are you guys doing in this space?
Yeah, okay. I think diversity is essential for better creativity. That's the simple bottom line. That's why you do it. You don't do it to make up numbers. You do it because you get better ideas. And, you know, things like Equal Future and Hold Tight wouldn't have come about, I don't think, if we didn't have diverse teams working on it. And, you know, coincidentally, both of those campaigns were led by Tara, who's one of our creative directors down in Melbourne, working with Paul. I'd like to think TWA Australia has been quite ahead of the game in terms of getting diversity right. For the last 5 years, more than 50% of our management team have been female. Kimberly Wells, our CEO in Melbourne. Nitsa Lotus is our MD in Sydney. We've got Kat, creative director in Sydney. Tara, creative director in Melbourne. And right across, you know, the depth of the management teams, we've been quite progressive, I think, and we're very proud of that.
Mm. Kat, as a female creative director, how do you think we're kind of tracking in the industry?
Look, I think it's definitely improving. I think there's other things that we can do as creatives as well, which I think is part of our responsibility. And, I've always kind of been of the mindset that if we're driving culture, then we need to sort of show that responsibly on our screens or, tablets or what have you. Push really hard for casting decisions that you make, really consider your locations, think about the stories that you're telling, because that is just as reflective of diversity than as anything else is what's happening inside our agencies. We need to sort of play that back to society as well.
Mm. And Roberto, you're kind of on the opposite side, because I feel like PR is more dominated by females.
It is.
How do you see that kind of playing out in the PR space?
Look, diversity is important anywhere. We are across the industry in PR so skewed towards female that I don't even want to think about the very minute percentage of men that work in the industry. But it's incredibly important to have blokes working in PR. Why they're not there, I don't have an answer to that. I often talk about this with my mates who work in PR, some of them men, some of them women, and I think there's been possibly, this stereotype about what PR is for too long, and we're definitely breaking it, and there's been great agencies in Australia that have popped up over the last couple of years that are showing what the true potential and power of PR can be. And I think that's attracting a different type of person to PR, and that different type of person is becoming more gender neutral as opposed to skewed one way or the other. But the more men, women, people of different race, orientation that we can get into media full stop is going to be far more reflective of how society operates than, as you rightly said, white men over the age of 35.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's kind of a nice sentiment to wrap up on, guys. You've been listening to the Ad News podcast today, sponsored by The Trade Desk and produced for us by Nova Entertainment.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.